Oh yeah, real lifers, citizens of the world, welcome to the Real Life Global Movement, where our mission is to inspire, empower, and connect the world through English.
We believe that English should be a fun and enriching part of your life that you can practice and enjoy whenever and wherever you want. Are you tired of boring lessons that suck the life out of your learning? Are you ready to step up your game and become a kick-ass English speaker?
Well, we're here to guide and inspire you on your journey to true lifelong fluency. It's time to stop just learning English and start living it. Can I get an aw yeah? Aw
yeah! Aw yeah! Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, from sea to shining sea, this is Ethan from Real Life English, where we believe that listening to podcasts is a fun, natural, effective, and
poetic
way to learn English. So download this podcast and listen to us while you're walking the dog, waiting in line at the bank, building a set, or even
studying ancient poetry.
Aw yeah. I'm joined here in the Cross Atlantic studio by the man who always talks about Fight Club, Justin Murray.
Hey, that wasn't that funny. The man who always talks about Fight Club. Oh, yeah, yeah, I get it now. Sorry, I didn't get the joke. So what's the joke? Can you explain that?
So the man who always talks about Fight Club, meaning that you'd have to have seen the movie Fight Club, I guess, to get that one. But the first rule of Fight Club is you don't talk about Fight Club.
What's the second rule of Fight Club?
Second rule of Fight Club is, what is the second rule?
You don't talk about Fight Club.
Okay. I thought the second rule was there are no rules.
Oh, yeah. How are you doing today?
I'm doing pretty good. So although Fight Club is, you know, a very alliterative tale, classic, we're going to be talking about a little bit more classics. So what are we talking about today, J-Man?
We're talking about the author of Fight Club, because Fight Club is based upon a really ancient English poet named Shakespeare.
Was it?
No.
The true life of William Shakespeare? So who is William Shakespeare in case, I think most people probably know him, but just in case someone doesn't?
He's pretty much the most famous poet in the English language ever. I think he's very important and very influential on the English language.
Yeah, I think poet and playwright, and he created some ridiculous amount of words that we still use today in English.
What's a playwright?
A playwright is someone who writes plays. It's someone who plays being basically what people act out on a stage that you might go see. For example, if you go visit New York, you might want to catch a Broadway play. So you could actually go see a Shakespeare play. And there's a lot of these. They're very classics. They're written in a very different language than modern English. And it was like a language very much that Shakespeare invented. And so if you ever wanted to like read a Shakespeare play, you have to have a very advanced level of English, I would say, because even for us native speakers, it's very challenging.
Yeah, it's actually what we read in like 9th, 10th, 11th grade. I guess really trying to develop our critical thinking ability, and we write papers about it and talk about it in English class. I don't really know how much it's helped me become a critically thinking adult, but it definitely helped me think about literature in a different way and to really like look for symbolism in literature and to be able to talk about it in a very deep and multifaceted way.
Yeah, I don't know if I really appreciated it at the time that I had to read it, but I read it more in middle school because I went to a private middle school and they really valued, I think, like you were saying, kind of critical ability to like critically think when reading and things like this. And Shakespeare really challenges you. But I always used to kind of cheat. I would get like the Cliff Notes, the Shakespeare Made Easy book, which would have on one side the original, on one page, it would have the original. And then like on the other side, it would have like a translation to modern day English.
Yeah, I have to admit, I sort of did the same thing. Sometimes I use Cliff Notes, but I think Cliff Notes had like a summary of an explanation and the symbolism.
Yeah, it's kind of like reading a foreign language, though. If you're not accustomed yet to Shakespeare, when you first start reading them, it really does not feel like English.
Even when you get used to it, it still doesn't feel like English. It's really tough.
Yeah, like old English. And I guess also like in, maybe it's worth mentioning in middle school, we used to, because this was like a school of 18 people, 16 people, something like that. We used to actually read the plays and then we would actually like act them out. We would do it and like all of our parents would come and stuff and watch the play. So I've also acted in some Shakespeare plays.
Did Did you act out it in modern day English, or did you have to memorize the lines in Shakespearean English?
We had to memorize the lines in Shakespearean English. So our poor parents probably also didn't have any idea what was going on.
All right. Well, today it's actually going to be a lot more practical than just plain Shakespearean English, because we're going to give you 15 practical expressions that have integrated themselves into modern day English. And this is stuff I was reading the list. And there are a lot of expressions that you recognize that maybe aren't so practical, but we tried to condense it to 15 expressions that people use in just everyday English. So I think it's going to be a lot more useful for you.
Exactly. And maybe you want to challenge yourself after listening to this podcast and go pick up a copy of like Romeo and Juliet or Midsummer Night's Dream or King Lear or any of those classics and put yourself to the test.
You can watch the movie and it has Leonardo DiCaprio in it.
The modern Romeo and Juliet.
But I think they do use the language of the original language of Shakespeare. Well, I don't think it's original language.
They do.
Because even the versions that we read, I think it's been edited because the English language has changed so much in the past 500 years that they had to change it.
Yeah, for sure. But before we get too ahead of ourselves with that, let's jump into the kick-ass quote, which comes from Shakespeare himself. Do you want to read that one, Jamin?
So Shakespeare once said, "Have more than you show, speak less than you know." What does that mean, Ethan?
I believe I saw it came from King Lear, from the play King Lear. And so it's basically what I understand from this is that you should be humble. So it's kind of like, you know, you shouldn't show off everything that you have more than you actually like show you have, and speak less than you know. So, you know, for example, not always trying to be right in an argument, not trying to brag about your amount of knowledge or try to appear very intelligent if it's kind of in an ingenuine way. I think that rings very true even today.
Kind of reminds me of a Mark Twain quote, and I looked this up right now. So it's better to keep your mouth shut and let people think you are a fool than to open it and remove all doubt.
I like that one better probably. It's more, I think Mark Twain's American, right? So it's like the classic British versus the classic American.
Yeah, definitely. Mark Twain, the American William Shakespeare.
He's a great author as well, but let's not go off on too many tangents. So the shout out from today, who are we giving a 5-star shout out to?
It's not a 5-star review, but this is a 5-star member of the Fluency Circle. A shout out that we've been wanting to give for a while because she's such an amazing member of the Fluency Circle. Her energy is very infectious. So what does infectious mean, Ethan?
Infectious, I think we talked about viral in the last podcast, that it's like basically something that, for example, a sickness, we'd say it a lot with an illness, that it's contagious, like it can spread easily. But you can also say it sometimes for positive things, that something is viral or infectious, that it spreads to other people. So like laughter is infectious.
Usually like when you're around somebody and that person, just the feeling of that person is contagious and it makes you feel better. So Alexa from Italy, it's a big shout out to you, who are a very infectious person, a very positive person with just such positive, really happy vibes that always really impact and inspire people in the group. And her English is phenomenal too.
Yeah. And what is the Fluency Circle, in case people don't know?
Fluency Circle is our global community of English learning all-stars, from people who are learning with us with our Fluent with Friends or our Real Life Radio Native Immersion course. Yeah, so Alexa is in that group and she's really kicking ass. She's a kick-ass learner and she's really interested in American culture. She loves the United States. But at the same time, like, she has a very global perspective on things. So thank you very much, Alexa, for all the impact that you are bringing to the Fluency Circle and to the world. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. And if you want to learn more about any of our dynamic premium courses and how you can be one of the next members of the Fluency Circle, you can go to reallifeglobal.com/Shakespeare. Shakespeare is spelled Shakespeare. And you'll also find the show notes there with all of the expressions and even more vocabulary and resources that we talked about today. So that said, let's jump into the main part of today's topic with these 15 expressions from Shakespeare. So what's the first one, Justin?
So we're going to move through them in alphabetical order really quickly. First one is, "All that glitters is not gold." Words of wisdom.
All that glitters is not gold.
So what is to glitter?
So glitter, it means that something's kind of like shiny. So it captures light.
we might say in the United States, bling bling.
Bling bling is like, I guess, rapper culture. So you say for like shiny things or glittery things that you might wear.
Yeah, it's like Ethan's wearing some bling on his necklace right here. Bling bling.
That's some major bling.
It has an E and a dollar sign, actually.
E-money.
E-money, yeah. So all that glitters is not gold, right?
Yeah, that's actually a way you could give someone a nickname in English. It's not that common, I don't think, anymore, but it's like taking the first letter of their name and then saying money after it. So I guess I could say also J Money.
It's true, man. This is what they call me.
So gold glitters a lot. Gold is very shiny. And I believe what Shakespeare means by this, or at least how we use it nowadays, is that not everything that, you know, appears to be very nice and shiny or new or whatever is actually that way. So you can't always necessarily trust something's appearance.
Yeah. What's beneath the surface a lot of times doesn't have the glitter, the shine, right? Another expression that same thing is like, you can't judge a book by its cover.
Exactly. That's what I was going to say. And it says here, like, so I guess the way Shakespeare had written it was all that glitters is not gold. But I think nowadays it'd be more common to say not all that glitters is gold.
Okay. A slight change in words, wording.
Exactly. And I've actually heard it. It's a common expression in Spanish as well. So maybe translate across different languages. So what's the next one?
All's well that ends well.
So I'd say all's well that ends well is basically when you've gone through kind of a rough patch, you've gone through a difficult period of time, but then in the end you come out with a positive result. At the very least, you come out like you're okay, you're healthy, you're safe, you're, you know, not in disaster. We would say that like all's well that ends well. So for example, I had a student who lives in Florida and they just had like a big hurricane there. So they had to actually like evacuate the state and everything for like a week, but then they came back and their house, everything was okay. So in that case, that would be a good example. All's well that ends well. They had to leave and everything. The hurricane really sucked, but the house and everything was okay. They didn't lose anything. Everyone's safe. All's well that ends well.
You often say this a lot of times, like when maybe somebody commits a mistake, right? And you're angry at them, but then everything works out. Right. So, for example, maybe you entrust somebody with your wallet that has the money in it. Right. You go to a restaurant or something and that person leaves the wallet on the table. And you're like, what? You left my wallet on the table? How could you do that? And then you go back to the restaurant and the waiter has the wallet and say, it's OK. I don't blame you. All's well that ends well.
Yeah, exactly. So the next one is, I think, is very handy, actually, for English learners.
Handy?
Very handy. Useful for English learners. So what's the next one?
To break the ice.
To break the ice. So that's basically to use something to start a conversation or to get to know someone. And, you know, obviously, if you're learning a language, sometimes just purely your accent or, you know, the fact that you're not a native speaker can be a good way to break the ice. So if you start a conversation, someone might just say like, oh, where are you from, by the way? So that's kind of, you know, a lot of people say they want to speak perfect, like a native with no accent, but your accent can be a nice icebreaker. So maybe you don't necessarily want to get rid of it.
Oh, yeah. So moving on, we have the faint-hearted. Faint heart. What does faint mean?
Faint means weak, right?
Yeah, faint.
I think the other context that I've heard faint in might be like a faint light. So it's like when a light is kind of like weak. For a flashlight, for example, if the light is faint, you need to probably change the batteries. And someone is faint-hearted, I guess it means they have a weak heart, so they can't really handle doing big, courageous acts. For example, maybe learning English is not for the faint of heart. I think I've heard it used more nowadays as faint of heart, right?
Yeah, you might hear it said like, it's not for the faint of heart. So the of becomes an in connected speech a lot of times, right?
Exactly. And you've got that NT at the end of faint. The NT a lot of times in American English becomes just an N sound, so that whole connected speech there could be faint of heart, faint of heart.
Or even faint of heart, faint of heart.
Faint of heart.
Uh-huh.
Exactly. Anyway, going on to the next one, good riddance to that confusing connected speech there.
Good riddance? What do you mean by that, Ethan?
Good riddance is like when you're happy something is over or you're happy someone left as well. You could say, well, good riddance to that guy. I didn't like him anyway. You know, for example, if someone gets fired at your job, but that person was really mean to you, you could say, good riddance. It'll be much better working here without him.
There's a song by Green Day called Good Riddance, right?
Oh, really? I didn't know that. I'll have to whack that in the show notes.
I think they say in the song, I hope you have the time of your life. This is a song that they played at like graduation ceremonies back in my day, at least. I'm like 10 years older than you. So did they play that song in your graduation?
Not at my graduation, but I've heard it in like a lot of those kinds of contexts.
Yeah. So the expression good riddance, to think about, like, to get rid of. What does get rid of mean?
To get rid of something means that to like free yourself of it, to not have to worry about it anymore.
Yeah. So maybe that's more common use of the word rid, because we don't use riddance that much outside of this expression. I don't even know any other uses actually, but we definitely use to get rid of a lot.
All right. So what's the next Shakespeare expression?
This is an interesting one. It definitely is something that you used to reflect a lot. In my mind's eye. In my mind's eye, in your mind's eye, what's the best way to describe this?
In your mind's eye. So it's like basically thinking of how a lot of times our thoughts are visual. So we don't always necessarily think things through words. Like you have that conscious that talks in your head. But sometimes, especially some people with languages, are very visual. So for me, for example, I remember words a lot better if I learned it in a certain kind of context. And then I can like imagine that context where I was, who I was with in my mind's eye, and I remember the word or the expression. That's a good use of it. It's kind of funny because I just was reading this morning and this was used in the book. So I could give that example as well, that it was talking about basically learning how to learn. So it's like, for example, in mathematics, if you're trying to learn a certain equation, that it can help for you to kind of try to imagine it in your mind's eye. So not just simply as like symbols or whatever, but as actually what's the meaning behind that.
Awesome. Okay, moving on. We have next expression. We often say kill them with kindness. Kill them with kindness.
Kill them with kindness. So that's a very mature way to deal with people you don't like or people who are maybe not that kind or polite to you. You could kill them with kindness. So instead of reacting with anger, you would, you know, be very polite to them. You would say, oh, you look nice today, or maybe give them a gift or something like that. But you'd be doing all of that with very genuine intentions that you want to be, you know, a nice, mature person. And then a lot of times when you kill someone with kindness, they'll change their attitude too. And if not, then they're just an asshole, I guess.
Well, you can be passive aggressive with this too. You know, you can really be kind with somebody, but your intention can be to get back at them, right?
Doesn't kill them with kindness have a certain genuineness to it generally?
Yeah, you're right. I mean, you want to have a pure intention, of course, but I don't know, if I'm being really loud, it's like, oh, I'm sorry. I'll speak a lot softer. I didn't mean to really disturb your peace.
You can be kind of sarcastic about it. And you said passive aggressive. What is passive aggressive?
Passive aggressive is, you know, people who they don't really face the problems head on. They're not honest in the conversation, that they might, you know, say that they're okay, but then you realize based upon their actions that they're not really okay about something, right?
Yeah. Like they might give you the silent treatment.
The silent treatment. Okay. What's that?
I think it's a very immature to deal with something like when you're mad at someone, you just don't talk to them. They just say things to you and maybe you answer like very, very shortly, or you just don't answer at all. So that would be the silent treatment.
Yeah. So anyway, kill them with kindness. One thing to recognize here is like notice on them is reduced to M. So them, this is very common. You might say call them, you know, call them, kill them, kill them.
Exactly. Kill them with kindness. And the next one, so this is, you know, a common joke that you might hear from a little kid, I think. What is it?
Well, they're knock-knock jokes. Shakespeare invented knock-knock jokes. Okay, so for example, my favorite one, I think I probably told this in the podcast a long time ago. So knock-knock.
Who's there?
Boo.
Boo who?
Don't cry, it's only a joke. Told by a four-year-old, right? A four-year-old told me that. So the joke is like knock-knock, who's there? And then boo-hoo, right? Boo-hoo is the sound you make when you cry, right? Let's do another one.
Exactly. Well, knock, knock, first of all, not if, in case someone doesn't know that, that's like knock, knock. Like if you go to someone's house and you want them to answer the door, you might knock on the door. So that's the noise it makes, knock, knock. And then when you do that at someone's house, they probably would respond, who's there? If they don't want to like open the door right away, they don't know who's there. And then that's where how this joke basically works. So you said you have another one?
Yeah. So just one to add on what you said there is like, they're usually wordplay, right?
Yeah, exactly.
They might say a word that doesn't really make any sense. Nobody has the name, but for example, knock, knock.
Who's there?
Orange.
Orange who?
Orange, you going to let me in? In that case, it's like orange is, you know, the fruit, right? But it sounds like orange, you going to let me in? It's like, aren't you going to let me in?
Exactly. Aren't you? Orange ya?
Yeah, it's interesting because it's sort of like, it rhymes with a connected speech. Aren't you? Right? Aren't you becomes aren't you? Orange.
Aren't ya? And also there, I guess the other part I forgot to explain is when you say like orange who, or boo who, like the WHO question mark. That's like asking for someone's last name. So, you know, if someone calls you on the phone and they say their name's Bob, which is a very common, well, maybe not nowadays as much, but it's a very common name in English. You say Bob who? Like you know more than one Bob, you want to know their last name. So to move on to the next one is laughing stock. So have you become the laughing stock of Northern Brazil, Justin?
Yes, I have. I've become the laughing stock. So stock, right? What is it? What is a stock in Shakespeare's days and even now? Like what is a stock?
I mean, I would think, isn't it like kind of like a, not a torture device, but kind of like a humiliation device?
It's a wood contraption. What does contraption mean?
A contraption is like a sort of device.
Yeah, a tool that basically they put, you put your head and your arms through this device and you can't move. And so basically you're out in public, basically subjected to, for the public to look at you, right? So it's a form of humiliation. People come, they look at you and they laugh at you as a form of punishment. Right. This, I think it was common in Shakespeare's day. So that's the laughing stock. So the person's out in the stock, locked into the stock for a certain time period, and people come and laugh at them. In the same sense, if you're the laughing stock, it means that everybody laughs at you publicly.
Yeah, it's because usually because something humiliating happened to you or you did something humiliating, and you would say like, I'm the laughing stock of the town because like everyone knows that I did this really humiliating thing. All right. So the next one?
Next one is to lie low. So what does lie low mean, Ethan?
Lie low, it means generally that you did something maybe illegal or something you weren't supposed to do. And so you're basically trying to keep a low profile, for example. You don't want to do anything that's going to call too much attention to you and get caught for what you did.
Well, think about if you're in like a grass field, right? And maybe you want to move across the grass field, but you have to stay low. Because if you stand up, people can see you, right? But I wouldn't say that it's just about, you know, if you did something illegal, because you can say, hey, what are you going to do tonight? I'm just going to lie low. I'm just going to stay in my own world and not really do much because I'm kind of tired, for example.
Yeah, or because I just robbed a bank and I don't want to get caught.
Did you rob a bank, Ethan? It seems like something happened.
No, but it would be a good idea. The next one is, there's a method to my madness.
Okay, I guess this is a situation when, you know, somebody's doing something that seems crazy. It seems like out of order. There's no logic to it. But they say, wait, it's okay. What I'm doing is not crazy. There's a method to my madness. So you kind of explain the formula that guides you, your logic.
Exactly. So a madness, it's another way to say craziness. Less common nowadays to say someone's mad than to say someone's crazy. Because usually when we say someone's mad, we mean like angry. But it can also mean crazy in this case. And basically it means there's a method to my madness. There's a reason for me acting so crazy or for me doing this crazy thing.
But you often see it, for example, in people who are maybe successful in a certain area. Maybe there's somebody who's training, for example, for a race, and it just seems like they're just running really hard and stuff. But no, there's a method to my madness. It's like, I'm going to explain why it is that I do what I do, what makes me successful.
All right. So the next one, in one fell swoop, what's this crazy word swoop?
A swoop is what a bird might do. A bird comes down from the sky and it swoops low to pick up its prey, oftentimes, right? What does prey mean in this case?
Prey, you have a predator and prey. So predator are the animals that hunt and prey are the animals that get hunted, that get eaten. If you do something in one fell swoop, I guess like a bird, they kind of like swoop down and quickly grab something. It's like you're doing it in a very kind of fast, direct action, right?
Yeah. So you might say like, yeah, you know, I have a lot to do today. I have five tasks, but I'm going to do it all in one fell swoop. So I'm going to do it in one push of activity.
Exactly. Just buckle down and focus. So the next one, we only have a few more, is one's own flesh and blood. So you might say like, oh, like, you know, I'm really embarrassed to be seen with him, but he's my flesh and blood. I gotta.
So he is your blood? What's flesh mean?
Flesh is like, it's kind of like saying meat, but we'll use it for like your flesh, like the meat of your body. And when you say flesh and blood, it means like someone's related to you, right? They come from the same family.
Yep. And they carry your flesh and blood because, you know, your blood carries your DNA.
Yeah, exactly. So my mom always used to say, because my brother and I would fight a lot when we were young, and she would say, blood runs thicker than water. Have you heard that when you were a kid?
Can you explain that?
Yeah. So blood runs thicker than water. It basically means that your family is, the relationship is really important. You know, like those bonds are much stronger than water, I guess, would be like friends where you don't actually have any sort of flesh and blood relationship.
Yeah, I used to say that to my brother all the time. You know, I know you're my own flesh and blood, but you are one piece of work.
What does one piece of work mean?
Well, piece of work is somebody who's complicated and maybe, I don't know, you're not so pleased by that person.
Yeah, it means they have a lot of issues that they need to work on.
But a piece of work in general is, you can say that, you know, this is an excellent piece of work.
Exactly. So that's the 14th expression, in case you didn't realize we moved into the next one. And the very last one, which ending up on a very sentimental note, wear my heart upon my sleeve. So do you wear your heart upon your sleeve, Justin?
I do quite often. In fact, I do it on the podcast here, dear listeners. So before you judge me, just recognize that I'm wearing my heart on my sleeve in this podcast. You know what I'm saying? Expressing myself sincerely. And you're making yourself vulnerable in some sense, right?
Yeah, it's basically to put yourself out there, we might say a lot too, right? I'm putting myself out there. I'm like taking off my armor. So it's basically when you're out in the open, you're very verbal about maybe any issues or problems you're having, or it can be you put yourself in a situation where you're doing something very scary or very challenging.
So what is a sleeve literally?
A sleeve is, if you have a shirt or a jacket, it has a sleeve. It's the part that covers your arm.
So you might have like, you know, long sleeve, short sleeved, sleeveless, right?
And if you're Brazilian, you need to be careful, because like I heard someone say once that their favorite fruit was sleeve. What's the confusion there is that the word for sleeve and the word for mango in Portuguese they're not cognates. They're the same word used for both of those, but in English they're not. So sleeve is on your shirt and the fruit is mango, ending in an O.
I think I saw like a World Cup translation, because there was a whole series of World Cup translations, because Brazil was a little bit disorganized going up to the World Cup, I mean, some people say. And so everybody was like translating everything in the entire country for the tourists that were coming. And so maybe there were some less than high quality translations. And that was one of them. You know, there's a nice restaurant that had sleeve soup.
A nice cup of sleeve juice, right from the heart that I wore upon my sleeve. So hopefully you'll wear your heart upon your sleeve with your English. You'll do those things that are scary, that sometimes maybe you don't necessarily want to do, but you're going to do them anyway. And I think we can wrap up this podcast. As I said, you can find all of these expressions and all of the other vocabulary that came up right in the show notes as well. You can learn more about how you can take your English to the next level with some of our courses. And that is going to be at reallifeglobal.com/Shakespeare. And do you have any final words that you want to leave our audience with, J-Man?
Yeah, just, you know, even if you can't understand Shakespeare, it's good to at least buy a copy of like Romeo and Juliet or something, King Lear. Just put it on your bookshelf. People will think you're smart. You can quote Shakespeare. You know, you can use these expressions. Let them know how cultured you are.
You can like have less than you show and speak more than you know.
Exactly. That's what Shakespeare was about. That's wisdom.
All right. So let's 1, 2, 3. Oh, yeah, these guys out of here. 1, 2, 3. Oh, yeah.